You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. For the fourth and final time this week, coming to you from Cheltenham, from the FitzDares Club, nestling in a cosy corner of the ROA Chalet, right at the bottom of the orchard. And I'm very grateful to all my guests this week for making the long journey down here and blowing the cobwebs out each and every morning. Grateful also to everyone for looking after us so well in here, particularly John, who has been brilliant with the teas, the coffees and everything else, and has generally been a complete star. Talking of which, Lydia Hislop is here to preview Gold Cup Day. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, we're still going.
Yeah, well, that's the best thing.
Excellent. Have you enjoyed your week so far?
I have. I think there's been loads and loads to be happy about and some things to reflect on and investigate next week onwards.
Excellent. So we can just tease that for a little later in the show. We must start though with the Boodles Cheltenham Gold Cup, which will be run at 3:30 today, Friday. 11 runners in the expected absence of Hewick. Shark Hanlon won't be minding that because it absolutely pissed down last night.
It did. It was still, where I was this morning, it was still raining quite hard as well. Extraordinary, yeah.
Okay, so any chance then that the ground could tip into, oh, this could be a wacky result territory, or does it simply play into the hands of Galopin des Champs?
Well, it could be heading towards Nassalam territory. Certainly, I think Gary Moore will be pleased that Nassalam is in the lineup.
Is he going to be a clever cookie in the King George and go off at 5-1 or something?
Okay, I doubt it. But I mean, I don't think that Galopin des Champs is going to be inconvenienced. I mean, I think he'd been fine on good to soft. I think he's fine on heavy. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think this is one of the better Gold Cup winners that we have seen in recent years. He was brilliant last year, going toe-to-toe with Brave Man's Game when that horse was on song 12 months ago, and then managed to put 7 lengths between him and that horse at the line. Now, that might be partly to do with whether the trip stretches Brave Man's Game's stamina, but nonetheless, it was an authoritative performance. And then he's backed it up in the Savills Chase with that absolute demolition. And they changed the tactics. You'll remember that last year his jumping was a little bit scruffy in behind horses. It didn't really cut it in the John Durkin, where he was beaten by Fast or Slow, who's a neater jumper. So then they decided to be a bit more positive with him in the Savills Chase. And those are the tactics I expect to see. I think the Irish Gold Cup was a matter of let's just get this job done.
I kept trying to fashion another winner of this race, but best horse wins race kept slapping me in the face.
Yeah.
And the more the rain fell, the more I thought that. Because I thought it neutralised Fast or Slow a bit, and to an extent neutralised Brave Man's Game as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Fast or Slow, it's interesting that he's had an operation to augment his breathing since we last saw him in the Irish
Gold Cup. It can't have been a very significant one.
No, it can't be.
Given the length of time.
Absolutely, it can't be, but it's nonetheless interesting, so I do wonder whether that was something. And also, I think the paddock judges were saying on the day at the Dublin Racing Festival that there was some capacity for him to tighten up and get a bit fitter. Brave Man's Game, well, he's just had a bad season, hasn't he?
Has it been bad?
Well, no, bad season. Bad is overstating it, but I think he's had a muddled season. I think Paul Nicholls himself has reflected and felt that he's made some poor decisions. He stressed that Brian Drew wanted to run in the Betfair Chase, but also he tried to win the Charlie Hall first time out in a first time out state, but on ground that was sapping and conceding a lot of weight.
Brian, come out from under the bus yet, or still there?
I imagine Brian came out straight away, picked himself up, dusted himself down, and moved on.
My read of it was Weatherby was fine, Kempton was excusable, and Haydock was a poor run.
None of it is up to his best form of last season. I think the best thing I can say about Brave Man's Game is he comes here fresh. At least I think that will help. But even his King George second, which would have been third, I think does not stand up to scrutiny in this field.
Okay, so do you look for one of the younger horses to get closer to Galopin des Champs, or do you look for a horse who is of the old staying handicapper mould?
Well, let's deal with them. I think we can deal with them quite quickly together. If we look at last year's Brown Advisory form, we've got the Real Wacker and Jerry Colomb taking each other on again. Their form, I don't think, has looked up to this level as they've graduated into open staying company. It's interesting that Patrick Neville has remained positive about the Real Wacker all season, and he is getting steadily better. And that first time visor might help to bring him back to that metronomic jumping that he showed last season. That was the difference between him and Jerry Colomb in the Brown Advisory. Jerry Colomb is too slowly away from his fences, I think, to be an ultra top class chaser.
Okay, but he will keep digging in, won't he, Jerry Calonne?
Absolutely, but and the fact that we've got this holding ground will neutralise that. We saw that with Grey Dawning versus Ginny's Destiny yesterday as well. I feel that had that been a faster ground at that trip, Ginny's Destiny might just have got away and gained on Grey Dawning at his fences. One's a stayer, the other is an intermediate distance horse. Back to this race. So I think Lon Presse is going to run well. I think he's unexposed as a stayer. He's the Brown Advisory winner from two seasons ago. Obviously, Protectorat has advertised his Fleur de Lis win. I'm going to ignore the Ascot Chase, which was something of a fast and too short for him anyway. I can see him running well. I can also see Gentleman's Game running well. I think, I mean, just look at Mas Morris's record, the horses that he brings over to Cheltenham. He brought a 50-1 horse for the Coral Cut Franciscan.
Yeah,
the horse finished fifth.
Yeah.
Ran really well. A competitive fifth, not a, you know, pick up the pieces fifth, a competitive fifth. And he's obviously had the War of Attrition win this race in 2006. I think the conditions will suit Gentleman's Game. I think he'll stay on, and I think he's interesting. The other threat, I think, is Corak Rambler. Because he is, we do not know the summit of his ability. I think he beat Fast or Slow in the Ultima last year, idling in front. I know he's receiving a little bit of weight, but his victory is more authoritative than that. And he had the Grand National one a long, long way out. He's been coming steadily back to form. Lucinda Russell has brought him here fresh, as she did to the Ultima last year. And you know, her judgment, such as with Giovinco running in the Brown Advisory, has been rewarded with his career best third there. So I think Corak Rambler is the player who might be staying on.
If she'd run Giovinco in the Ultima, he'd have won.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm being provocative.
Yeah, theoretically, you're right. But do you think he would have coped with that hustle and bustle? He just looks like a big gawk to me still. And that was the first time that he was mature.
Well, he's definitely a very good horse.
He is. He's very promising. And I think that will have brought him on hugely.
Okay. Would be some results if the Grand National winner were to come back and win the Gold Cup en route to another tilt at Aintree. Last horse to win both races?
Oh God, don't ask me questions like that.
It's Lascargo, isn't it?
It will be Lascargo, yes.
And the last horse to win them in the same year was Golden Miller, yes?
I think so. Why am I thinking Garrison Savannah? What am I thinking about?
Because
Garrison Savannah
won the Gold Cup and then got beaten narrowly in the Grand National in the same year by Seagram.
That's it. Thank you very much, Lee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw my son Mark the other day.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really? How is he?
He was on good form. He was here at the Legends lunch.
All right.
The 100 years of the Gold Cup lunch, which I really, really enjoyed.
Well, it did look good fun, and the numbers of names from the history of racing was fantastic. And there was a great photo, wasn't there, of past Gold Cup winners with Rachel Blackmore holding the Gold Cup.
It was good to see so many people there. You know, David Ellsworth and Mark Dwyer. You turn around, there was Cyril Griffiths, François Duvet.
Oh, fantastic.
Michael Dickinson.
Yeah.
Anyway, on we go. Let's talk a little bit about the supporting cards today. And in assessing the Triumph Hurdle, Lydia, I want to draw your attention to a piece written by Chris Cook in the Racing Post, where he's interviewed trainer James Grassick, who was intending to have a runner in the JCB Triumph Hurdle. James trains in France, and he was going to be the beneficiary of the statutory £2,000 travel incentive that Cheltenham give you to bring you over. That is negated, I should add, if you win £2,000 in the race. Yes, it is. Right. But they withdrew their offer of the £2,000 travel because his horse had a tendency to be tricky at the start.
Right.
And he's gone ballistic, really, and has launched a broadside at Cheltenham, saying they don't put the punters first, they've lost sight of what's important. And he's very unhappy. And Cheltenham have defended themselves by saying they really can't be seen to be giving incentives to horses to come over who prove troublesome at the start and are likely therefore to potentially get in the way of the smooth running of one of their marquee races on Gold Cup Day. When I frame it like that, whose side are you coming down on?
I can see both sides. I can see arguments in both directions. So from the trainer's point of view, he will be looking at horses, and I think in his quotes he says so, like LeBake and Shishkin, who have a record of being troublesome at the start, and he sees those horses being able to run at the Cheltenham Festival. And also from his perspective, as far as I'm aware, Cheltenham, unlike the Grand National, for example, haven't warned in advance that this is the kind of scrutiny that they bring to bear on horses that might be running in their races. Now, I may be wrong, but I haven't heard of Cheltenham doing that kind of thing before. From Cheltenham's point of view, well, clearly off times are increasingly becoming more important, belatedly more important, you might say, in Britain.
And, they've done well with that this week. There's barely been a race off late.
They have, and so they are taking it more seriously, which is a good thing. Also, they've got the potential for protest, haven't they? So that's another issue. That was one of the things that exacerbated last year's Grand National, the behaviour of some horses down at the start, and that is something that is going to be brought into greater consideration for next year's Grand National field. So yeah, I can see pros and cons. On the wider point, the point that is made about whether Cheltenham are losing touch with the sort of the grassroots, the people, the participants, the people who actually make their sport, and the day in, day out punter. Well, I do think there is something for Cheltenham and the Jockey Club to learn, but maybe we'll come back to that later on.
Okay. On the Triumph Hurdle, who wins?
I think Nürburgring wins. I think that he was the best horse in the race that Calaconte won at Christmas at Leopardstown with Cargese in second. Had he had a clearer run, he would definitely have finished second. He might even have finished first. We heard from Joseph on the Nicklett Daily podcast earlier, a few days ago, that this horse had been laid out for this. He missed the spring at the Dublin Racing Festival, and he gave a very positive, upbeat report about him. And I think the Irish are a bit much of a muchness, I think. You know, Bunting is quite raw. He's going to have to improve. Ethical Diamond can't jump. Neither can High Wind.
I've had a tip for every Mullins horse in this race. It's a bit like
exactly
the one the other day.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? They don't know, do they? Paul Tannen's pulling for Stormheart. Cargese, I can give a chance. She settled better last time. And the Literalists will be going for the Sergino Beats Salvatore Mundi form in another country for another trainer in a different type of race.
Hood, tongue tie, not ridden by Paul Tannen.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the typical Willie Mullins approach to a young horse who is still a novice, isn't it?
Didn't he do it with Il Était Temps first time?
He did. Was it Il Était Temps, wasn't it?
No,
what's the Joe Donnelly Colours the horse that finished
third?
Yes,
that's the horse I meant.
Yeah.
I didn't mean Il Était Temps.
Autant Couleur.
That's the one.
Yeah, okay, that's exactly what he did. So basically, if he's got a young horse who is still a novice, he'll try them in Grade 1 company, and if they win a Grade 1, great, but if they don't, then they're a novice for the next season.
Fine, I get it. All right, there we are. That's the JCB Triumph Hurdle sorted out, and that little fracas from France cleared up as well. Be good to see more French runners as well.
I would love it. I mean, I would love it. It was great to see Milantino over. I mean, it would be fantastic if Elif Ponce could come over. But yeah, it would be great to come back. And Isis Landry, we know that came up on the pod this week, didn't it? You know, those kind of runners. And when Francois Dumont, who you've just mentioned, used to come over, and Guillaume Macaire, and, you know, cut a dash through our races, I used to love that. And I'd love to see it happen again.
Francois Dumont's an amazing man. He's not as sound as he used to be.
Really?
But if you just look at him without watching him walking, he looks about 50.
Can I?
He hasn't aged at all in his face.
Can I tell an off-colour joke about
Francois Dumont? Of course you can.
Okay, so there was once a sort of lunch for the Whitbread Gold Cup, and it was the time that Martin Pipe was still training. I think Francois had a few in a very sophisticated French way, of course, not in a boorish English way. Yeah. And so he was going down all the various runners that Martin Pipe, and he went peep, 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 and then he turned to the person next to him, I can't remember if it was male or female, and said, in French, this means the blowjob.
I did not see that coming.
Thank you.
Did not see.
Neither did the recipient of that particular line.
Oh, my word. Good. Yes, of course it is. Yes, he's spot on. Right. Where?
That's so new, isn't it?
That's definitely the first time that's been mentioned on this podcast.
Well, directly, certainly.
Oh, my God. Right. Where's Neil Phillips with my drink? I need one now. Shall we talk a little bit about the week as a whole? I think we should. And we'll wrap up the rest of the card later in the show. Talk about the week as a whole and your reflections of it. Yesterday, people seemed to have a bit more of a spring in their step, even though the weather was foul.
Yeah, I think it was because there were different stories, different kinds of winners, and this is nothing against Willie Mullins. His domination is not his fault, is it? And in fact, it's an impressive sporting achievement. You were saying yesterday, how could you compare it around the world? It's so difficult.
I couldn't find anything.
He is, I mean, it is a magnificent sporting achievement. He's, you know, spoken about it so well, and so has the whole family, and it just sort of has reflects so well on the team and the way in which they conduct themselves. And that, you know, Willie's just, you know, he's a dominant champion, and he's so nice, and he's, you know, willing to give of his time, and, you know, I admire him greatly. And I think, I mean, it's been interesting how many people within the sport want to talk about how much they admire him. Nicky Henderson on your podcast yesterday, Harry Skelton after winning on Protectorat in the Ryanair yesterday, just want to talk about how much they admire him and how much that incentivizes them to try and get, you know, near him if they possibly can.
Yeah, if you beat him in a race, you feel a real sense of achievement, because you know you've performed to the absolute optimum level. So he's been a great success story this week. 100 winners now at the Cheltenham Festival, and the prospect of a ridiculously good day today. Dan Skelton with 4. Could you see that coming?
Well,
and he might not be done.
No, he might not be done. And I think this has been a breakthrough festival in terms of grade one terms for Dan Skelton. To come away with 2 grade ones, I think, is really significant, because he's had, you know, very good festivals before. He's largely, they have been reliant on handicappers.
Yeah.
Now he's got 2 grade one winners yesterday and a couple of handicappers. And he's got a proper Gold Cup prospect in Grey Dawning. And he's got a Protectorat, who just was a brilliant winner of the Ryanair and could come back and have another go next year.
And the thing that struck me is that nobody would have criticised Dan Skelton for running Grey Dawning in the Brown Advisory, because that looked a more obvious race for him. Certainly nobody would have crabbed him for running Protectorat in the Gold Cup, a race in which he'd run really well twice. He certainly wasn't an obvious Ryanair winner at the beginning of the season, even though you put him up a 33-1. and his judgement calls have just been spot on, haven't they? That's the key. He's shown very sound judgment in every single one of those winners.
Well, particularly, I mean, I was talking earlier about the difference in jumping between Ginny's Destiny and Grey Dawning, and it's the ground that was pivotal that made his decision between the Turners over 2.5 or the Brown Advisory over the extended 3. And I think his, not only was the end decision right, the working was spot on as well. And it's been very interesting. He's been giving an insight to his working, particularly about Protectorat, particularly about Grey Dawning this season. And I think that's what I'd like to hear more of. I heard Ian Renton from Cheltenham being interviewed on the Today programme on, I can't remember whether it was Monday or Tuesday, it could have been 4 weeks ago, it feels like that. And essentially, he was asked whether racing was a betting product or a sport, because it was put to him that we only hear really about the betting and we don't hear about, you know, the behind the scenes, the sport, what it takes to train. I thought that was a bit rich on a programme where 98% of its interaction with horse racing is via a daily tip, and generally it takes bad news to get racing to be part of the programme. Sometimes we have some good news. Constitution Hill's brilliance was covered. But, you know, I think it is important, and I think trainers and jockeys are increasingly understanding the importance of conveying to fans, and therefore more widely, what they're doing, the intricacies of their job, the hard work, but also, you know, the decision-making process. I think that kind of insight just will show to everybody that it is primarily a sport. It is a sport that relies heavily on betting. That has been a historical fact, and it continues to be a fact, in order to fund itself. But it is very clearly a sport first, and it always will be.
Mm. The sports minister was here yesterday.
Stuart, I saw your interview. Yeah, I did. I found him very frustrating, I'll be honest. You know, really frustrating. I spent some...
Oh, hang on, the book's coming out.
Yeah, I spent some...
Did you take some notes?
Yeah, well, I watched it last night. I knew I was doing this, so I thought I would make some notes. I liked your question about what is the Gambling Commission for. And he was talking about regulation and implementing recommendations of the white paper. And you pulled him up and said his remit is to enjoy gambling responsible and safely. And, you know, he said that he's advocated for that. But he never said that it was the Gambling Commission's job to advocate for that. And I think that's the biggest criticism for the Gambling Commission, that they do not represent the punter. And also he kept saying that the affordability checks that are being carried out now on punters that everybody is already experiencing is not anything to do with the government. Does he not realise that he has oversight of the Gambling Commission? The proposals in the white paper are not going to help those people that he is rightly, and any human being, as you pointed out to him repeatedly, who right-thinking human being is going to be concerned about those people. But these measures are not going to help them.
That's because he kept leaning on the argument of, I have seen constituents, I have heard stories of... And I thought, is that as sophisticated as that argument is going to get? I was quite surprised that was just the constant pillar on which he leant.
I'm going to quote Matt Hancock, and in a positive way. He said that we're in danger of saying something has to be done. This is something, so let's do it. You know, something does have to be done about people who are at risk of that kind of harm. But what is being suggested is not going to help them. And what is being suggested is going to be to the active detriment of the vast, vast, vast majority of people who are able to interact with products such as these without any harm. He kept talking about frictionless, and he kept talking about having a pilot scheme. And I think two things are really important. They're going to have to, the government and the Gambling Commission are going to have to define exactly what they mean about frictionless. Are they talking about open banking? Is that what they're talking about? You know, are the choices A, open banking, B, sending, you know, 3 months of payslips, or C, the black market? For people who want to bet, those are the three choices. Because it's not so much the hassle of having to go through your bank statements and take a photo of yourself next to your passport and all of that kind of thing that people object to. It's the invasion of privacy. And if it's open banking that he's talking about, then I would suggest to him that this frictionless concept is not a solution. And also, the idea of, I mean, I'm interested, he's talking about you don't have to use a passport or your postcode or bank statements. I wonder how you'd open a betting account without your passport or your postcode. So I think there's a lack of understanding here. He also mentioned that there has been some suggestions of people who only bet on horse racing falling into risk of gambling harm. The 2018 health survey found that 100% of people who responded who were horse race bettors also bet on some other product. So you can't really isolate people in that kind of way. Other studies have shown that the problem gambling rate on horses is actually nil, and that lottery products are actually have a higher percentage of people with trouble in this area.
He refused to accept my distinction between different types of gambling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So to come back to my point about A, does frictionless equal open banking? Because they need to be clear about that. B, this pilot scheme needs to be transparent, and we need to have some kind of independent oversight to it, and not people with a dog in the fight, not people who have a vested interest. We need somebody representing punters. Now, I suppose they do have a dog in the fight, but at the moment they've had no kind of voice whatsoever. I think you need somebody representing the normal customer, the ordinary customer, to understand the parameters of this pilot scheme, understand exactly who has been asked to take part and what their reaction is. We need to see transparency. And the one thing, well, not the one thing, one of the things that I find that the Gambling Commission falls down on is their lack of transparency. They've not published consultations. They've not, you know, defined their terms. They've used misleading statistics, and I think that they need to bring themselves up to being part of a robust and open debate. What is the point of making legislation and making decisions if it can't withstand robust argument? If you're hiding from robust argument, then there's something wrong.
Well, the other point that I put to him was what he was likely to tell the House when it came to April the 24th and the deadline for determination on reform of the levy. And there is a real possibility of no deal here if some of the more hawkish members of racing's hierarchy get their way, and then the minister will have to intervene.
Yeah, and
what quite what they've been doing for the last year, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you put the point to him that government generally don't like to intervene here. They think that it's down to the sport and the bookmakers to sort that out between themselves.
And of course, he's told us that the bookmakers have already put a deal on the table.
Yeah, yeah. And the point that you made as well was that we're talking about levy reform here. We're not talking about just a levy agreement. We're talking about actual active reform. So at the moment, that doesn't sound like much has come to fruition. Yeah, there's a deal on the table, but does it feel like we're near resolution? It doesn't to me.
It's certainly some of those things that used to get talked about, like offshore races. Don't confuse me with point of consumption. I mean, as in races that don't take place in Britain being subject to levy.
Yeah.
In Britain.
Yeah.
And various other bits and pieces that's surely gone.
Well, I haven't heard it mentioned lately, so therefore maybe not. I mean, and that seemed to be the most palatable part of the argument at one point.
This will be a bundle deal involving media rights and so forth, won't it?
Well, it has to be, doesn't it? Because essentially, however you package it, it is money going from bookmakers to the sport. Mm. So you know it has to be a package deal. Mm. That makes sense. But you have to be thinking about turnover as well, don't you? You have to be making sure that people are able to interact with the sport, and there are so many issues impacting on that.
All right, shall we head back to today?
Yes.
And figure out what's going to win, and before our refreshments arrive, which I'm hoping will happen quite soon.
Yes, well, I'm hoping that it's the House of Decreasing Coherence today and not the House of Clarity.
The House of Clarity was, they were really nice.
Were they?
And the drinks were lovely.
Right.
And fresh.
Yes.
But there wasn't any booze in them.
If you want a glass of wine, have a glass of wine. if you're not drinking alcohol that day, don't mimic it. Oh, well, that's my view. That's
well,
my view. Lots
I don't
of people
know.
Do like it.
The botanical thing was quite nice and fresh, and
right.
I quite enjoyed that. But that it didn't feel like it was trying to replicate an alcoholic drink. Now the faux champagne.
Right.
Was certainly the best example of that sort of thing that I've tasted.
Okay. I mean, I can see that for an occasion, and coming to the Cheltenham Festival is an occasion, that if you're not drinking, you might want to feel part of the mood. Mm. And if you're, you know, sipping a Coca-Cola or other forms of cola are available, or some other kind of cordial. not in my book.
Not
anyway,
really.
No. Elderflower cordial, loads of people hate it, all that kind of stuff. Then that you will feel more part of it if you're chinking glasses with something that looks the same as everybody else. Mm. I can see that.
Can we hear from Liz Armstrong now, please?
Yes, yes, please. Yes,
right.
Oh, you know I love Liz.
Here we go. All right, it is the fourth and final day of the Cheltenham Festival 2024. And here I am in the shopping village again at Stand 47 with my resident artist, Liz Armstrong. Liz, it's been a wonderful week, tough weather-wise, but hopefully the bit of shelter required has seen a few people pass by the stand. What are we looking at today?
Well, today we're looking at, I have a new painting up. It's called Young Guns, and it's oil pigment on canvas. It depicts horses jumping. It's got lots of layers, different colours. It's in my style. It's loose, it moves, it's got some charcoal in it. And it's about national hunt horses jumping.
You live very near the coals, don't you, at Whatcombe? So you see flat horses all the time, you know, high quality thoroughbreds. What is it you love about the jumpers and particularly love about painting them?
The jumpers, their conformation is totally different to the flat horses, and their longevity they last a bit longer than they seem to have more seasons than the flat horses. They're just different characters, really. The flat horses are slightly more flighty, but they're all both beautiful animals, flat and national hunt, because they're thoroughbreds.
And how do you use your style, your colour, your way of applying textures to convey the difference of national hunt racing?
Well, I have this feeling about, as I said before, that they're flight animals and they like to run, and that's how I like to interpret them. I don't do what I call chocolate box art when they're just standing there. So by using colour and line, I try and insinuate this to make movement, because that's to me what they do. When you look at them racing or even running in a field, they're actually moving all the time.
I see a lot of your work that we've talked about, texture and the paint and the materials you use, and to really try and bring them off the canvas. Underneath is a watercolour, and I'm interested to know, it's a watercolour of Brave Man's Game, who's running today in the Gold Cup.
He certainly is. And I love this horse. I just like him.
I'm interested to know what scope you've got with watercolour to put your own stamp on things.
Well, with watercolour, a lot of people don't get on with it, but I've done it for years. I've used watercolour. It's water, really, with colour on. So I use lots of gaps where the white comes through, and so that helps the whole subject matter move. It's a technique that you actually should paint very quickly with, because it's water and colour, and that's what I try and do. And I use a lot of ink when I do my watercolours to bring the actual equine standing, to make it stand out more.
To make it less still.
Yes, yeah. To make it less still.
So you splat. So where Brave Man's Game is jumping the fence here, the final fence in the King George at Kempton in 2022, it's Royal Pagai back in second there. You've almost flicked ink. To show the birch flying.
Yep, to insinuate it, because that's the feeling when you watch and you look. That's what they do. They do it so quickly, you know, and the ink is very good. You can flick it around and it just helps you get the feeling that they're moving.
There we are. If you're a Brave Man's Game fan, the watercolour is here at Liz's stand. 47 in the shopping village, and Hounds on the Go is next door. That's one we saw yesterday, but we didn't talk about.
Yep, Hounds on the Go is it's not obvious. It's a hunting scene, and it's with coffee in the background. It's three huntsmen standing, waiting to see what happens with their dogs. It's, again, an ink watercolour and painted quite quickly. It's just a small sketch idea, really.
A lovely piece it is as well. Do pop by Liz's stand. It's been great having you on the show again this week. Liz, the years seem to be rolling by far too quickly, but we'll see you to do it all again in 12 months' time, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes, hopefully, if I haven't moved and gone to another country.
Well, fingers crossed. Is that likely?
I don't know, it might be.
Oh, no, please don't go. We enjoy your company enormously. Liz Armstrong, thank you so much.
Thank you, and everyone enjoy the Cheltenham Gold Cup today. The 100 years, it's 100 years.
My wife trying to ring me. Let me just do that. Well, frankly, it may be Gold Cup Day. Who knows what day of the week it actually is after the whole 5 days of being here at Cheltenham. Head feels a bit fried, but time to apply some good sense and clear thinking with David Ord, editor of sportinglife.com, who's here with me in the ROA Fitzstairs Lounge. What do you make of it, Dave?
Lovely setup, isn't it? Mm. Some very famous silks adorning the walls. I thought a very pleasant place to spend the afternoon, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, little off the beaten track, it has to be said.
It did take a bit of finding, and Niall Hannity's not a great navigator, would be my one takeout from this. He told me exactly where to go, and I didn't follow the instructions to get here in the end.
If he can navigate anything today, I'd be seriously impressed. Tell me a little bit about how your week's gone so far.
It's been good, hasn't it? The performances on the track have helped light up a little bit. It's been lacking in certain areas. Yesterday felt different. There was an energy that started coming through with it. What was happening not being the expected. The Skelton winners, Nichols on the scoreboard, Sir Alex Ferguson, Harry Redknapp. It's great to see Sam Allardyce here. If you're in desperate trouble, as we were in the
first week. He didn't have a winner as well, did he?
No, he did. But when you're in trouble.
He's a football manager, he might have done.
When you're 10-3 down on the scoreboard, you sent a big Sam. That was a clear message. So, but no, it's been okay. I think it's better than I feared it was going to be the first week. It's gathered some momentum at last, I feel.
Okay. It could easily be as you were today in terms of dominance from one stable.
The one day they thought they'd be dominant was the Friday. You be talking to people closer to Willie all week, it was always the Friday. Thursday they thought they were in trouble, they were light on Thursday. Friday the spread of winners they might have was ranging from 3 to 7, so I think you will see a return to something like we were seeing on the first 2 days this afternoon.
Yeah, now having said that, two of those races are furiously competitive handicaps, so that levels the playing field a little bit. But in the conditions races, have you got any idea who the best of their Triumph Hurdle horses is?
No, because I don't think they do. I was expecting Paul Townend potentially to ride Salvador Mundi when the jockey declarations are coming. He was the free hit, wasn't he? I think the one who's sailing under the radar is the one who won the spring juvenile. Everyone's been taken by the horses in behind her, unlucky in running. She travelled like a dream, hit the front on the bridle, went away and won the grade one. She gets the weight. She's the one for me, but I don't think they know. They think they're much of a muchness. And what the theory there is, you might not have the best of the lot. If you think all yours are within 5 or 6 pounds of each other, but now Shugino's out, that might well be good enough.
And of course, I ask you, because you're at sportinglife.com, where the Mullinses tend to converge. This is where we tend to find their nuggets when they consent to throw them your way.
They do. I mean, we don't get that many. We get Willie's version and Patrick's version. I mean,
they're not always the same, are they?
They vary wildly on bill away. Willie would give him no chance whatsoever. Patrick thinks if he's within four lengths, he'll be the last. He's a right chance. If he's an if of them. But what I would say, the one horse you get, do you know when you get ringed at preview nights? Horses ring names. The one horse that was ringed three times by people involved in the ad was Key de Bourbon in the Martin Pipes. At least you know that's a consensus of opinion. At least three members of the Close Sutton team were sweet on his chances coming into the festival.
What was the horse they won that race with? Went on and finished second in the Gold Cup. Was it Sir Deschamps?
Sir Deschamps, yeah. And Galopin won it, of course, as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Quite well handicapped that day, I think.
I was just thinking of a Jiggins Down horse.
Exactly. There's another theme running through, isn't it? And there were two runners in it this time, but I mean, there's a McManus horse that's shorter than Key de Bourbon in the market now. It's ultra, ultra competitive. Mm.
How's your week been from a reporting point of view?
From a reporting point of view, we're okay because we're all in on Mullins. So the first 2 days we're okay because he's our columnist, etc. But you're looking for news angles. You're looking for something that gives you something a bit different. Dan Skelton, obviously with what had gone on over the weekend, the case coming to a head, the Langer Dan thing the day before, there were undercurrents as well. But Dan Skelton was a story yesterday. It felt like the, pardon the pun, the dawning of a new era, his arrival on that big stage. He was playing it down, but his chest was puffed out. He was up for the game. That was good. It was nice to see something different. Even though we're Team Mullins, he's our star columnist, but it felt good to have something else to report. Mm-hmm. Some British success, because it's so thin on the ground.
Yeah, Jeremy Scott enjoyed that.
That was wonderful, wasn't it? And especially in the race that they thought we were told they had no chance. Two superstars were going to battle this out. It was the Elliott Mullins head-to-head, and then you see this thing travelling out the wrath of God on the rails, looking in your race card. That ain't Giggingstown. That ain't Kenny Alexander. That's brilliant to see.
Now, of course, almost everybody will be thinking about Uttoxeter, and have the Midlands Grand National on Saturday uppermost in their mind. But in thorough fashion on this podcast, we've drafted our man in to look at the big race.
Yeah, and there's a Mullins runner, Mr. Incredible. Mr. Incredible, he's got to jump off.
Is it bad that I had no idea?
It's not bad, Nick. It's a long week. It's a long, long week. He's got to jump off to qualify for the Grand National. That's and with him, probably a 50-50 job, isn't it? They took him for a schooling race at Thursday. He jumped off. I don't think he actually completed, but he did jump off, and hopefully the raucous crowd at Uttoxeter on Saturday might well inspire him to do so. But John Joe O'Neill, he went close to one of the big handicaps here. He's got Iron Bridge in this Midlands Grand National. £2 clear on time form with a comment, looks ready to win a big staying handicap. Now, if you're ready to win a big staying handicap, you've only got 12 rivals in the Midlands Grand National at Uttoxeter. One who might not jump off and might not consent to finish the race as well, who's second favourite. So it could be the day for John Joe. That's a couple of horses out because of the ground earlier in the week that they quite fancied. One good runner in the big handicap here yesterday.
Yeah, Crabilly could have won if he jumped a bit better.
Yeah, he could, couldn't he? Just got too far out of his ground. He came on really well, didn't he? And I thought that might have been one that got away. Hopefully, according to time for ratings at least, the Midlands Grand National might not do.
Excellent. David Ord, editor of sportinglife.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
And as you can probably hear, the speakers have turned on here in the Fitzstairs Lounge in the corner of the ROA Chalet. But the good news is that we can shut out the surround sound by drinking Neil Phillips' delicious wine, because he is here. I mean, a little late, Neil, I have to say.
I mean, this is the latest, isn't it?
You could have turned up a little more promptly.
This better be good, Neil.
So what am I drinking?
We've got Joseph Duran. Come on, I thought, Nick, Lydia.
It's Le Cray, my favourite.
Yeah, so there you go, you see. Actually, Lydia sent me a rider for this one.
This is my favourite wine.
I knew that. No, I didn't actually. But I know you love your Chardonnays, I know your Macons. So you love this star, don't you? Joseph Duran,
I love
1880, ooh, nice. Still a family bitto, and they are, just to remind people how good Macon can be as well.
Is this one of the wines that you get those repeat emails from your local?
So the Good Wine Shop in Teddington, Pippa from the Good Wine Shop, sends me emails saying, I might be able to find one for you.
Yeah, they're very good.
And they're excellent as well, because they are, here we go.
And are you hoping that she's a pod listener and that she might
here
be?
Here we go. Hi, Nick. This was from the 2nd of December. I appreciate you're well stocked with white burgundy after your recent visit, but I didn't want this to pass you by. Chateau de Meursault Terroir d'Exception 2018 AOC Bourgogne Blanc.
The fruit is from a cooler plot next to Merceau, and it really does taste like it. There's a lovely balance of precision and contained opulence. Cool but fully ripe fruit, a mellow creamy texture backed up with a persistent line of ripe acidity and mineral finish. £48.50 a bottle at case price. I tried it this week as part of a staff tasting. All the best, Pippa. Didn't want you to miss out.
She's got your number, hasn't she?
Yeah, I went and bought it.
That's great.
This is delicious.
This is gorgeous.
I had 100 quid worth of loyalty points. That's what you've got to worry about.
I mean, this is great.
It's lovely.
Isn't it?
Good. Well, I just enjoy drinking. Can you just whip through the rest of the card for me in rapid-fire fashion? The county hurdle is won by?
Well, I mean, Lodestone is very short, but he's clearly got a very, very good chance on his Betfair hurdle form. But the horse I'm increasingly liking is Magical Zoe at a price. Go back and have a look at her Dawn run second last time. She was too far back. She actually stumbled after two out as well. Did really well weaving through horses to finish second. The form at the DRF in which Zenta was third and what's the other horse? So Scottish was fourth. You can craft arguments for any of them, but I like Magical Zoe.
It's going to be fun, this, because most people will be listening on their way home and be laughing at our selections. Pied Piper for me each way.
Right.
Bertie B?
I found this really hard, and I ended up going with Gidley Park, who is a horse I think is quite raw and has a lot of ability.
Yeah, you went for best horse wins race, didn't
I did,
you?
Yeah. And I'm not
I
sure.
I wish I had now.
I'm not sure whether this race will... I mean, the race is getting classier, so maybe he'll be fine. And I think he'll improve with the step-up in trip. And hopefully he would have learned plenty last time out. And Lucky Story is one of the few for Nicky Henderson that actually kept his end up this week with a fourth in the Coral Cup. I do think that now that we have seen Paul Nicholls have a winner and also Genius Destiny run so well, that the vibes will be better for Captain Teague. I think
yeah,
he'll be super
I tipped him in the end. Sort of wish I'd gone for Gidley Park, but I went for Captain Teague to grind it out. Fox Hunters?
What is wrong with Premier Magic?
Nothing. That's exactly what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
Completely agree, by the way.
Yeah. No, I mean, such a big price. It's a little bit shorter now than he was, but prior, it was an insult. It was an insult, I tell you. And that race that Ramillies and looked like he was going to win two starts back when he got in a duel with It's on the Line, and they were both almost caught by Billaway. He was
tough race, wasn't it?
Really hard race. And, you know, Ramillies has since come out and read like it was a really hard race.
Big part of me wants David Christie to win, having been chinned in this a few
Massive.
Weeks
Massive. It was a beautiful interview of you did with
He's
him.
Such
on the
a sweet
well.
Man.
He's a lovely man. He came on the Road to Cheltenham show the Thursday before the festival as well. Such a nice man. Spoke so well. Mrs. Paddy Power, I have gone for Limerick Lace.
Me too, again.
Oh, gosh, wow.
Yeah, I thought she'd outstay Dino Blue and Allegri de Vassi.
Yep.
And what's wrong with her form as well? Even the second to Cocoa Beach, isn't it? Cocoa Beach?
Yep.
It wasn't too bad considering it was 3 miles in an absolute slog.
Very much so. You are relying on Dino Blue not staying, but I think there is a positive. I mean, the fact that of the ground is going to put an extra accent on stamina, and I'm absolutely positive that Alec Darassi is a short runner over 2.5 miles. I think she showed that in Ace last time. I think she showed it when she was outstayed last year.
Martin Pye.
Sorry, Martin Pye. who's going to fair Le Peep for this afternoon? Well, so keep it French. I cannot believe we've gone down this line again.
I know. Michael O'Sullivan gets to ride in a conditional jockey's handicap hurdle.
How did he not lose his claim about 4 years
because
ago?
Because it's the start of the season that, in Britain. I think it's the start of the season that counts.
You know what I've gone for?
What?
I think Freddie Gingell will win a festival race today. So if you weren't watching racing TV yesterday, one of the greatest cock-ups of my career, when I started hailing, well, there have been quite a lot to be fair, when I started hailing Freddie Gingell's brilliant ride on Montmirail before realising it was Harry Cobbs. And don't ask me why I did it, don't ask me how it happened. It was one of those weird mind blasts. Now, whether it's because I'd seen him decked up in these colours on Sunny Gino, whether it's because he'd ridden Montmirail the previous time and I'd been looking through the Chepstow form, I don't know. Anyway, I'm thinking he's going to make up for it a day later.
This has happened to me so many times. You get something in your head and for some reason you don't re-examine it. Yeah, I totally feel.
So there we are.
Well, we're having a nice, you know, Nick, we're sitting here drinking Macon Village Le Cray from Joseph Turin,
so
you know.
Good.
Lovely.
Great way to sort of.
I'm going to take a photo.
Yeah, you got to see it, Lydia.
Yeah. You've excelled yourself today.
Yeah, you have.
It's as though you've made up for being late.
Yeah. Almost.
Again, full disclosure, I told Neil 9 o'clock I didn't get here till 9:30. So, my fault.
Hey, come on. We're here having a great time, and this is a fab way.
And I can hear someone yelling Gidley Park home in a trial race.
It's a sign.
Thank you very much for your time this week. Thank you for listening. We will be back to do it Yes, what were you going to say?
We were going to talk about the Jockey Club, weren't we?
I thought we kind of incorporated that into,
yeah, okay,
into our...
The only thing I'd like...
Do you want to leave them with what... I tell you what. Leave Cheltenham's management with one salient piece of advice, constructive piece of advice.
I can understand the mental brace position going on.
No, it's fine. And then we definitely can have a more open...
Okay.
Conversation next week.
Okay, so clearly, if you were saying something like this, it would be done from a point of wanting the sport to succeed, wanting the Jockey Club to succeed, wanting Cheltenham to succeed.
Oh, it's from a place of love, not hate.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, when you get constructive criticism, it's best to listen to it. And there seems to be quite a lot of bad feeling, for whatever reason, held quite widely towards some aspects of the Cheltenham Festival, some aspects of the running of the Cheltenham Festival. And rather than reacting angrily or defensively, I think the best thing to do would be to listen, because that is the only way that we're all going to be able to move forward. And I'm reminded of where Ascot was immediately after the new stand was built, and they faced a sort of grassroots backlash from people who could no longer see the racing as they once could, couldn't access this, couldn't access that, had nowhere to sit down, felt the food and drink was too expensive, and felt that they were being told when they went to Ascot, you can't do this, you can't go there, don't do that. And they were saying, this isn't the experience it once was. I feel that Cheltenham are in that same point. So they've got two choices here. They can either react angrily and defensively and not take it on board, or they can listen and accept constructive criticism and decide to move on and do better. And I think clearly the latter has to be the right way to go.
On that note, we will leave it. But we will pick all that up next week with a few more specifics, I'm sure. A lot's going to happen next week. I know, no Cheltenham Festival, and we're sort of between this and some of the flats starting and whatnot, but I feel it's going to be a busy news week.
Yeah, I think it is too.
All right, see you Monday. That was the Cheltenham Festival. Good luck, whatever you're on. Let's hope we get a barnstorming Gold Cup and they all come back safe. Lydia, Neil, cheers.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.